Hey, what up, y'all? It's your girl, Vivica Fox. Welcome to an all-new Hustlin' with Vivica A. Fox. We are going bigger and bolder. I'm your go-to girl for people, ideas, knowledge, inspiration, faith, love, truth, success, and of course, fun. Your hustle's going to get an upgrade with the most surprising, exciting, and fabulous guests from all walks of life. So, you're in good hands, darlings. But don't forget to subscribe and download to Hustlin' with Vivica A. Fox. All right, darlings. When I tell you today is all about inspiration, y'all are gonna get so inspired to move to the next level of your life. My special guest is Preston Smiles. Preston Smiles is an author, coach, and advocate for wellness and positivity. My kind of dude, you know what I'm saying? His mission is to mentor and guide people on loving themselves and seeking fulfillment. Welcome, Preston! Hey, Preston!
Ooh, ooh. Let's go!
Ooh, ooh. Was that right?
That was perfect.
Yes! Okay. So you started on self-reflection at an early age. Tell us what inspired you to do so.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of layers to it. Given that I grew up in Los Angeles during the 80s, during a time where from an educational standpoint, they just sort of didn't understand that there were levels to genius and that just because a kid didn't have a standardized brain didn't mean that they were not amazing. And so
what do you mean by standardized brain? I've never heard that one.
You know how they have standardized tests and,
okay.
And so some people do well on standardized tests and they have standardized brains.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
I happen to be one of those people that did terrible at that. And yet I was a genius in interpersonal skills and understanding emotions and things of that nature and leadership. But instead of the school system and my parents looking at that, they looked at where I wasn't and put me in special education. And I made up a lot of stories about myself, that I was dumb, that I was stupid, that I was less than. And all of that, created a space where I was traumatized for sure. And it's something I actually still grapple with at some degree. But it made me have a deep empathy for the underdog. And it made me begin to look at life a little different. And so by the time I was 15 years old, I had joined a gang and was doing a lot of really silly stuff, trying to be tough.
Yes.
And
so did I hear you say that you're a Los Angeles native?
I am.
You know, that's rare.
It is. It is.
You know, that's right, because everybody comes to California in search of a dream. And exactly. So when someone tells me that, it's like, you know, I was born in L.A., it's like, oh, my God. So where were you raised in L.A.?
So I was born in Compton and raised in Carson.
Straight out of Compton. I'm sorry, I had to do
yes,
that.
Yes, you had to. You had to.
Okay. So you said you were born in Compton, raised in Carson.
Yep, in the South Bay. And I grew up during the time where gangster rap, it went from X-Clan and like all the like, you know, conscious rap to NWA and Banging on Wax
yes.
and all that stuff. And I was, you know, a 8, 9, 10-year-old kid, which is when most kids are going through, most little boys would go through a rite of passage. So my rites of passage was trying to be a gangster and trying to be tough and
yes.
trying to be like what I saw on television. And at 15 years old, I had the first sort of really understanding of intuition because one of my best friends asked me to go out and drink and do stupid stuff like we always did. But something internally said, don't go.
Hmm.
And I said no. And he made fun of me and called me all kind of names. And I was like, yeah, I'll see you tomorrow, man. And within an hour, every single person in that blue Astro van that I was in the night before that and the night before that and the night before that, every single one of them was shot. And my best friend was shot in the head and died instantly.
Was it a drive-by?
No, it was a disgruntled guy who was going through something, and us being stupid 15 and 16-year-old kids, the guy, you know, asked my friend, what are you looking at? And my buddy Scott
said, here
we go. Exactly. And it just escalated. And
So how did you feel when you found that out? Did you feel lucky or did you then penalize yourself for not going?
Exactly. A little bit of both. I had a lot of survivor's guilt.
Yes.
And I didn't know how to cry at that point. You know, we beat little boys and girls to that degree out of their emotions by the time they're 15 and 16 years old. So I didn't even cry. I didn't even know what to do with those emotions. I was just so stunned by the whole thing. And it prompted me to be able to look at life differently. I ended up moving to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Wow.
Yeah, I had to get out of there. I was afraid I was going to be next. And so I ended up, and this is the end of the story, but also the beginning of it. I ended up at a school where I was the only Black male in the entire school.
Wow.
And, yeah.
And so wait, hold on. I just so everybody follows us. You go from L.A., homeboy getting shot. You were supposed to be with them to now moving to the whitest place in America, being the only brother in the school.
Yep. Yep. Exactly.
And how old?
I was still 15 and a half. This within 2 weeks, I left.
Wow.
When my friends got shot, I took off. And
jeez.
Yeah, this was a game changer for me because I checked into the school and I'm sure you know, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is about him going from Philadelphia to LA.
Yes.
And I went from LA to Pennsylvania, which is also where Philadelphia is. And I pulled up in a beat up white Nissan Sentra. And as we were pulling into the school, there was just nothing but BMWs and Mercedes. And it was like literally culture shock for me because this was one of the wealthiest public schools in Pennsylvania. Mm. And I got out and I walked to the office to get checked in. And as I was going by each classroom, everybody was like sort of looking out the window like I was an
But eight. They had never seen no Black person before?
Exactly. That's how crazy
it was. Okay, I mean, what year is this? Do you remember?
This is 1996.
Oh, now come on. Like, you ain't in the 60s. Like, I can see if it was when I was going to school, at least the 70s. This is in the 90s. They look at you like that.
They were, but let me finish the story.
Okay.
You're going to love this. So instantly, I become the most popular kid in school, obviously.
Oh, that's good.
And I joined this new gang called Wexford Mafia, which was all these little, these rich white dudes. And we were headed to a party. This is crazy because I'm answering your question. This is the last part. So we're headed to a party. I'm in this kid, Brad's BMW. I'm in the back seat. They're listening to Outkast, Wheels of Steel. And I have a 40 in my lap. Everybody's smoking weed, passing alcohol. We're drinking and driving as 15 and a half year old kids heading to a party, listening to Outkast, Tupac, and Biggie. And I had this moment where I was like, oh my God. The kids at my former school were doing the same exact thing, but they're going to jail. These kids are doing this and they're going to Yale. Mm. And the distinction and the difference was it's very hard to rise to low expectations. Okay. And so at 15 and a half, I had an understanding that the system wasn't set up for me to win. Mm. And so in order for me to win, I was going to have to play a different game and I was going to have to be aware of how that game was being played. And that changed everything for me. That was like, all I needed was a glimpse of what was going on in order for me to just take off.
So I find that so amazing that at such a young age that, you know, I left home when I was 17 years old, 1 month after I graduated from high school in search of a dream. And that was because I didn't want to be like everybody else. Yeah. My senior year, I got a revelation. I just like, my life isn't going to be here. And I left. But my mama, I had to convince her that I was going to college. Where were your parents in this whole scheme of thing?
Yes. So my dad, when Scott got killed, my dad, I told him I have to get out of here. And he said, let me make some calls. And so he called his high school sweetheart. My mom and dad had been broken up at this point.
Okay.
And my dad called his high school sweetheart, Shirley. And he said, this is before the internet. This is before like social media or anything like that. I got off a plane. There was a sign with my name on it. I didn't know what she looked like. There was nothing.
You had never met her before?
Never met her in my entire life. But it was an emergency. This is a 911. And so he called Shirley And Shirley ended up talking to my mom, and they all thought it was a good idea for me to at least go for a semester, if not a year, and just get away and see something different. And yes. So that's how that ended up happening. And I stayed for a year, and it was too cold.
Wait a minute. That was so California of you. You're like, wait, is it going to be like this for a couple of months?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Right. Let me tell you, when I go back home to Indianapolis, man, they get me for Thanksgiving only, and I'm out. Yep. You know what I'm saying? I can remember going to sleep and like waking up the next day and there was 12 inches of snow and yep. ice. Yep. Or, you know what I mean? Like when I see what's going on now in Houston and how they were not prepared for that, mm-hmm. that's how I feel like I am now. I'm like, ooh, cold weather. Oh my God.
Uh-huh.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Okay, so let's move on. Let's move on. Now, you said something that I thought was wonderful because I think it's now shaped you to be the man that you've become. That you said, we're taught not to cry. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is? That because I'm admit I'm a cry. I'm a huge crybaby. My mm-hmm. dad was a crybaby. I actually got my sensitivity, who I am, from my father. Mm-hmm. My mother was from West Point, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. She was the strong one that was like, you be strong. You don't show weakness. You work. Da, da, da. Why do you think that is? Is it because they don't want you to seem weak or to be a failure?
I mean, you nailed it. It's there. The perception is that emotions equals weak. Emotions mm. equals bad. Emotions. And to go a little bit deeper, all of our media for, you know, hundreds of years at this point
yes.
has been setting up a particular, even think about the cowboys and Indians. Think about Clint Eastwood. Think about like mm-hmm. how a man is supposed to be. A man has the right answers. He's stoic. He's a hero. He's X, Y, and Z. This is why men kill themselves more than women, is because they are so repressed. They're so emotionally repressed that those things burst out in ridiculous things. And this is just a side note. This is why I say and have changed it from midlife crisis to midlife awakening. Because what happens is if somebody recognizes that they've been living their life from somebody else. And they say, you know, enough with that bullshit. I'm going to do what I want to do. And so
finally happened for me.
Exactly. It's such a big deal to take ownership of one's life and decide, yes. make a decision that if I'm going to fall, I'm going to fall forward. If I'm going to fail, I'm going to fail on my terms. Right. And that's a beautiful, risky thing for a lot of people. And men especially have been taught to be tough, to tough it up, and that big boys don't cry and don't be a wussy.
Yep.
And
mm-hmm.
you hear that enough, you know, and you know, black women as well. Black women get their asses handed to them on multiple levels. And so there's a lot of generational trauma that we are all working through together.
Agreed.
And that's a part of it.
So why do you think that people don't understand their worth?
Mm. You know, there's multiple levels to it, but I'm going to break a few things down, right? So there's four aspects of what it means to be human. We are biological beings, which is easy. We are linguistic beings, which means we build worlds with our language, right? If mm-hmm. I don't understand the concept of door or doorknob, it's very difficult for me to get out of this room. But through the language and me understanding through language, I can now get out of this room, right?
Okay.
We are social and historical beings. This is the one I'm going to land on. We are social and historical beings, which means we were born into beliefs and interpretations. So almost always, we are a product of who we were raised by.
Agreed.
Or the lack thereof. And so if my mom had a scarcity mentality, if my mom was raped or abused, if my dad went through X, Y, and Z, more than likely, they're going to pass that same trauma to me.
Yes.
Through the womb. And then when I get on the outside, right, as a way of protecting me, they think they're protecting me. They will try to curb my expectations for the world and what I can and can't do in this world based on my skin color or where we come from, what side of the tracks we're on, X, Y, and Z. And so a lot of people don't know their worth because they haven't actually investigated the social and historical, the beliefs and interpretations that they've taken on. See, for me, I've spent my life looking at those things and deciding whether I want to keep them or not. Like my dad, rest his beautiful soul, struggled with some drug problems.
Yes, but happens.
But my dad was also a giver, so yeah. I'll keep the giver part, but I'll get rid of the part where one is addicted or allowing their biology to dictate what happens in the world. You know, a lot of people are drug around by their I don't want to say this in a bad way or whatever the case may be for your viewers, but they're drug around by their genitals. They allow the short-term gain of sex or food or shopping to dictate their lives. And for me, I say no to the good so I can say yes to the great.
I know that's right. Say that one more time for the congregation to all hear it. One more time, brother.
Yeah, I say no to the good so I can say yes to the great.
Yes, I love that. But you know, can I tell you, I learned a very beautiful word lately. Mm. No.
That's the one.
Okay. I did. I mean, and it took a long time because as a woman, you know, and especially like watching my mom, my mom, you know, we were raised in the church and this and the third, and which I love her for doing that because it instilled a lot of good morals in me. However, I had to learn in life who to give to, because I had a lot of people that were just tearing me down and dragging me just till Vivica was empty and was successful, but empty and not happy. So it wasn't until literally I looked in the mirror at myself and took responsibility for my happiness, yes, my worth. If a person, and I didn't mean it to be mean, I just had to be honest with myself.
Yes.
What was it in life that makes me happy? Who's not making me happy? Who's not contributing to me watching my flowers bloom? I can't even tell you how many houses I built, how many cars I've driven, this, that, and the third, and none of that equaled happiness.
Boom. That is it. All
Do you know what I mean? But yes. When I tell you, when I let go of a lot of those things, I called it seasons of shedding. Mm. I became so much more successful.
Yes.
Happier.
Yes.
With doing the simplest things.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And more. You know, like I still, don't get me wrong, I still like to flossy a little bit, you know, because it's why I work hard.
Let's go.
It's different because this time I earned it and I didn't earn it for someone else.
Yes.
So that I can make them happy or look what I'm doing. I earned it because I love what I do.
Yes.
Why do you think that so many people get stuck not doing what they love to do?
Yes. There's a multitude of reasons, but I'll start with this one. Very early, we start hearing from our parents, friends, neighbors, people at the church. Mm-hmm. What are you going to be when you grow up?
Mm-hmm.
That question assumes that there is one purpose. There is one thing that you are here to do. And if you do not figure that one thing out and that thing does not produce you money in X, Y, and Z, then you are not worthy. Right.
Wow.
And so I take all that conversation. To me, we are unique emanations of the Most High. And we do all have one purpose. And that is to reflect and reveal God's love in a way in only which we can. Right. That's our one purpose. Now, we have many missions. We have many visions. And to me, there's only two games ever happening. There's the outside in game, which says that the cars, the money, the fill in the blank, the likes, the comments, the attention.
Oh, my God.
Makes me worthy. Or the Inside Out game, which basically states, I am perfect, whole, and complete, but not finished. Mm-hmm. And my worth has nothing to do with what is happening externally. And while I will enjoy those things, they are not my God. And to me, that is when the whole game changes. And that's what I hear you saying. You recognize that, like, these things are fun and I will enjoy them because that's what I work hard for. But they don't define who Vivica is. And they definitely don't define who I am.
Mm. So I want to know, so you went from the gang to Philadelphia to the white gang to now just you. No, for real. That you, like, you know, because sometimes what we do, we go to different places with different bodies, doing the same stuff, getting the same results.
Yep. Real talk.
You know what I'm saying? And so I think that's where I was for a long time. And then all of a sudden I was like, this isn't working for me. Let me shut down. Let me look in the mirror. Let's start making some different choices. So I want to know, for you, how did you go from all that to now being an author, being a family man? I mean, what was that transition like for you?
So there's a few principles that I live by, and I live by them to this day. One of them is elevation requires separation. So for any of us to elevate, we have to separate. We have to separate from certain things. Sometimes that's environments, it's people. Sometimes it's ways of thinking. Sometimes it's what we put over our lip and into our mouths. All of these things have an effect because everything is touching everything. And so we can't compartmentalize life because life is just life and it does its thing. So for me, what has been one of the biggest game changers is understanding that the environment that I place myself in, right? Because the seed contains the blueprint for the entire tree.
Mm.
The distinction between a tree that grows 1,000 feet in the air and provides food and shade and water and provides, and a tree that grows 3 feet in the air and shrivels up and dies is not the seed. It's the soil that it's planted in.
Okay.
And so for me, what was the biggest difference when I went from Carson to Pittsburgh was I got into a different type of soil.
Mm-hmm.
I was always amazing. I was
love that.
I was always dope. I was always a leader. But when I got in a different soil, I got to see different. I got to experience different. And the first place we got to start is pictures, right? We do everything also with mental pictures. And so when a young, skinny black boy can see something else is possible, it literally opens up a new door. That's a part of why I step in. It's a part of why I do what I do. I have enough money right now to retire and walk away, but I don't walk away because we ain't playing over here.
Look, life's good.
Yeah, very, very.
You figured it out.
Mm-hmm. I'm super intentional about it, but I also know that I'm being used, right? Mm. And so I love breaking these things down. There's four levels of consciousness. To me, which is victim state. The world is happening to me. By me, which is the sort of hustle hard, I create my own reality, which is fantastic. Then we go up to through me, which is the third stage. And this is where I do my best to enter in, which is spirit, use me. God, use me. What would you have me say? What would you have me do? Who would you have me serve? Right.
Yes.
And then the fourth stage is as me, which, can get really tricky for some people, especially religious people. But in my opinion, God can't separate itself. And so when we allow ourselves to really own who and what we are, we know that we are a emanation of the Most High, which means we are it.
Did you go to college to get all this knowledge, or the school of life?
A little bit of both, but
okay.
The knowledge came from getting sick at 25 years old. I had a heart condition come up.
What?
Yeah. And I didn't
know. What kind of heart condition?
So without going too much into it, my father struggled with some addiction.
Oh, you told me that. Yeah.
By the time I was 13, I already believed that I needed to be somewhat of the man in the house. And so by the time I was 21, 22, 23, in my mind, I was so stressed out because I didn't want him to die that I felt like I needed to make it. I needed to figure out a way to get money. And I brought that energy, that stressful, scarcity, fear-based energy, and it aged me. I'm 40 years old. When I was 25, I looked like I was probably 45. And now I'm just reversing.
You do? I was like, because you look very young.
Thank
you
so much.
How old are you? Do you mind if I ask?
I'm 40.
Yes.
Yes.
You look young.
Thank you
so
much.
You know they say good black don't crack, honey.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. So when I got sick, a part of it was just I was so stressed out.
Okay.
That my heart began to break down. And my grandmother.
At 25 years old?
Exactly. That's how crazy. That's how stressed out I was.
Wow.
And so I had to make some drastic changes. And one of the first ones was paying attention to what I was thinking and speaking into the world. Because as I said, we are linguistic beings. And so I changed my unconscious thinking to speak what you seek until you see what you said. And so I began to prophesy. I began to speak into existence who and what I was. I began to be as attentive to my language as I was to my biceps, right? A lot of people, everybody want to work their booty out, but do you want to work your language out? You know?
He said, look here, your body's tight, but on the inside, you ain't right. Okay.
That part.
Okay. So then how did that then take you to become an author? So you get a heart condition, get yourself together. Yeah. And then how do you start? You do a motivational speaking, because you know what you sound like to me that I'm surprised didn't happen for you, that you didn't get into religion, become a pastor or something like that, because you're very motivating and in touch and you speak, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. So it's funny enough, I actually did go down that journey and then I quit. So you're on it. You see me. People began to notice is what happened.
Okay.
You know? Like always attracts itself. And when you raise your vibration, when we get close, because, you know, not to sound too woo-woo, but like this is actual facts. This is science. Everything on our planet is vibrating. Mm-hmm. And we attract at that level. You don't attract what you want. You attract what you are in any given moment. Mm. And so as I began to raise my vibration and think, speak, and act as the powerhouse Afro-amazing man that I am, people began to notice that. And they would say to me, P, what did you do? What are you on? Why is your life working like this? And what happened was I started coaching before I understood what coaching was. And just to be clear, I do and have written books, but what I actually primarily do, the thing that has me being a multimillionaire, is not writing books. I coach people. So I do that on like just before this call, I had 300 people on a call that I was teaching. And yesterday there was almost 1,000. And then I have one-on-one clients and things of that nature.
Well, do tell, how did it happen now?
So yeah, exactly. I didn't even know there was
a market for that. I mean, and that you become so wealthy from it. They're like, Preston, come on, bro. I just need you to talk to me. Come on. I need you to put some light in my world. Put some motivation in my world. How did you discover that?
It found me, you know, that's the thing. I believe that all of our callings are calling, right? Mm. But the question is, are we actually listening? And are we willing enough to risk stepping into something that doesn't feel familiar? So I didn't know what any of this was when I started. I just knew that I had to serve people. I knew that the stuff that I was learning was not readily available to any of my friends or family or anybody I knew. And so when somebody said, when I read a book that said your thoughts become things and you create your own reality, you know, this is before The Secret. This is before any of that stuff. And so for me, I was so blown away by it and also simultaneously so upset by it that I decided that I was going to give this gift everywhere I went. And that turned into, you know, I have, I think 26,000 people on my Instagram. Mm-hmm. These are people that rely on me to show up and remind them of who and what they are through my content. And so I started creating YouTube videos and things like that.
Wow.
And I started getting asked to speak all over the world. And then that turned into workshops in Australia and London and Costa Rica and Africa and everywhere. And I've been doing it for a while.
How long would you say that you've been doing this?
For the last 8 years as a professional.
Okay.
Previous to that, it was just me dabbling. But for the last 8 years, I actually have allowed myself to really go there and treat it like the gift that it is. And, I'm also very aware of, the laws of abundance. And I know that money is listening. And so I'm a money magnet. I say yes to money because all I do with money is give more. I help more, and so if there's certain people that to me should be rich, and I'm one of those people, and you're one of those people, you have such a golden heart that of course you should be killing it like you are. Of course.
Can I tell you though, this heart of mine sometimes, it bothers me that some people's like, you got such a big heart. The fact that you see me, I love that. Mm-hmm. But boy, does it suck when somebody tries to take that heart for granted. But can I tell you, the older I've got, I can see it quicker and clearer now.
Yep.
And I don't get, because I used to get really angry about it. Like, how dare you try to get over on me and da da da. Now I just bless them and walk away.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you know what I mean? And because I'm like, I'm not going to argue with you about me and what kind of person I know I am. And if it doesn't work, I bless you and I keep it moving. Yes. I do. And I feel a lot happier because I used to hold on to negativity and I just could see it in my face. Mm-hmm. I was sad. It was like, oh, wait, I'm too fine to be looking like that. Okay.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
So now, but you do have a book though. You do have
a
book. Correct. Mm-hmm. Your book is called Love Louder, 33 Ways to Amplify Your Life. Correct?
Yes. Yes.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, it was one of those things. This book, oftentimes when you set out to write a book, the book ends up writing you. And this was no different. As I mentioned earlier, I was in special education classes my whole sort of elementary through high school because of...
And that's so surprising.
Yeah, exactly. That's the interesting thing is like I was actually really, really amazing in so many ways, but my brain doesn't work the same. So I have dyslexia and things of that nature.
Got it. So it's like, instead of them embracing and figuring out what was different about you that made you unique, they try to say, oh, something's wrong with him. He can't. Yeah. Okay.
Yep. So for me, I didn't even read books until, I was probably 21. I just cheated and then they passed me through and it was just the whole thing. And the school system failed me, but I'm grateful for it. And this time, but to make a long story short, Love Louder is 33 tips and tools that I use on a daily, weekly basis. To keep my vibration high. To me, when we amplify our love, we automatically amplify our lives. And there's a huge misconception about what love is. Like you said it earlier, and I'll say it differently, but the same. Your no actually reveals your yes. So one of the most loving things I could do for myself and another is to say no.
Yes.
And yet, the way that we're taught that if you say no to somebody, you are not being loving. We're taught that if you are firm with your boundaries, that you are somehow a bitch or a pushover or X, Y, and Z. And I love me enough and I love you enough to not let you run over me. And
that part.
Real talk.
So, all right. So tell me, when you say 33 ways, give me your top five ways.
For instance, and this is, something that you experience and myself as well, but just knowing that the key to living is giving, right?
Okay.
So when in doubt, focus out. Oftentimes, people can get caught up in sort of a whirlwind of their own emotions and thoughts and feelings. And so what I teach in my book and I do for myself is when I'm getting caught up in all of the minutia and the crap about woe is me, I just say, who can I bless today?
Okay?
And so I'll go and look for people to support, to serve, to help. And every single time I do that, it raises my vibration and it reminds me of what's really happening. And so like that's one, gratitude But not just regular gratitude. So one of the things I teach is I have my clients do something called joy alarms, where they set 3 to 5 alarms in their phone. And every time those alarms go off, they are to burst into spontaneous joy, right? Mm. Reasonless joy. The alarm goes off, you dance, you get big, and you allow the cells of your body. Remember, we are also biology. There's three centers of intelligence: head, heart, gut, or mind, heart, and our gut. And so when all three of those are firing at the same time and we're in our joy and we're celebrating life, what happens is that the cells of our body, like, we're not meant to age the way we do, but because of the way we think, the way we stress, and the way we eat, most people age in a particular way. There's been multiple studies of people who are like what we would deem crazy, who have no concept of time, and they'll be 70 years old, but look like a 40-year-old because they don't have a concept. Oh, I'm 70, now I should be X.
Right.
Oh, I'm 50, now I should be X. Oh, I'm 60, now I X. Right. So getting into gratitude and into joy, reasonless joy, is one of the biggest keys to loving louder. I talk about in the book how I am a recovering people pleaser, and how
me too.
For real. That was one of the biggest ones for me, is learning how to recognize when I was doing that and what to do with it. Mm. There's so much in there for anybody listening who wants to have a peek or read my book. I highly suggest it, even though it's me. It is really good. It's bite-sized. It's practical. It's easy to get to. And anybody can read it. You don't have to be a rocket scientist or anything like that.
I love that. See, that's you're talking a language that you're like, I'm talking to you, not at you.
Boom.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not trying to hit you with a whole bunch of big words. So you go, now, what the hell does that mean? But yeah, you're like, let me help you understand. I want to ask you a question. Mm. How can we overcome fear?
Mm. Well, and I'm sure you've heard this before. Fear is false evidence appearing real. So one of the best ways to overcome fear is to shine a light on it, right? So, and to really look and ask ourselves, what's really true here? And what am I projecting? What am I making true that hasn't happened yet? Oftentimes, the things we are most fearful about are us going into the past and sifting through the past and saying, well, this happened last time, or this happened to so-and-so, so it's probably going to happen over there, right? So I'll give the example of somebody who's been through a divorce or been through a terrible breakup, right?
Right.
Often, and I've coached a lot of people on this, where they'll say, oh, I'm just not ready to date again. And, you know, like, I hate dating apps. And, yeah, you know, I got you. Right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But the truth is that they're afraid of being hurt again.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you then say, okay, I'm going to throw that away and I'm going to dive back into the shallow end of the pool? Well, no, not the shallow end of the pool head first, because I think once you get a little bit older, you learn to take your time to get to know people.
Yep.
So, because I hate dating, but then it makes you feel so good. These endorphins and everything goes off and you're like, yes, it feels great. That, you know, I love love and I want to feel love, but I have that fear of, don't try to get over on me or hurt me, you know? Yeah,
I hear that. I understand that. And I honor that. And I'm going to challenge you and that statement, not just you, but anybody. And like I said, this is so common that this shows up often. We as a society have been taught that relationships that are longer are worthy, and relationships that are shorter are bad and wrong and messed up in X, Y, and Z. And so if we take the expectation and the concept of how much time makes something worth my time, the game changes, because now I enter it into the same way that you would when you were 7-year-old Vivica Fox, when you were 13-year-old Vivica Fox, who would meet a group of kids or play with somebody and you would just be in your joy. And however long that lasted,
you were cool with it.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. There's not these attachments to, oh, now you need to be my husband. And now we need to, Y, and Z. And now we need to go down this route. Right. When we take that off the table and we say, hey, you know, out of 7.7 billion people, this person found their way into my world.
Hmm.
there's probably some magic here. There's probably something I can learn. There's probably a few laughs. There's probably in a relationship they're going to introduce me to. There's probably something that I need to learn. And so instead of me entering from, oh my God, don't hurt me, I get to enter this from curiosity. I get to enter it from, oh, what's here for me, right? If I'm not attached to even my wife, right? I'm just going to go down this road with you guys, because I know some of you guys are like, yo, that's easy for you to say. I did not marry my wife with the terms of forever, and neither did she. We didn't sign up for forever. We signed up for growth. We signed up for love. We signed up for the journey and for the ride. And whenever that ride ends, whether it's death or whether it's, you know, 10 years from now, whenever that is, we have surrendered to that piece, because you know, at this point, the divorce rate is higher than it's ever been. And one of the, but
even that's because people are spending time together. Who would have thought? Right. Yeah.
For real.
Who would have thought?
But so many people, even before the pandemic, recognized what their parents did and how unhappy their parents were, even though they stuck it out for 50 years and then X, Y, and Z, right? We only get one shot in this skin suit. And there's also a stigma and a shame of, like, you've been divorced, or you've been this, or you've been that. Like, if we take all that off the table, and I get it, right? It sucks to be hurt.
Right.
But oftentimes we get hurt because there's some part of us that's withholding and not willing to speak our truth in the moments when we see them, when we experience them, when we feel them. And okay, it's like the difference between vulnerability and transparency, right? Vulnerability means there's something that you can hurt me with, right? If I tell you this information, you can hurt me. Transparency, when I'm sharing transparently, it means that I know who my daddy is. I know who my mommy is, and it's not you, right? And so, anything I share with you, use it, don't use it. Leave me, stay with me. Whatever you do, I'm still perfect, whole, and complete, but not finished. And that is the game, is to be so in love with oneself that another can't hurt me.
See, and that's how I feel. That's what I said. How can you receive love if you don't love yourself from Jump Street? Like I think for me, like, you know, I decided to, like, focus on career and, like, not and not look for others to make me happy. And like I said, it was the most successful when I got shed at people. Mm-hmm. But it's like now I'm ready to, like, share and love again.
Yes.
And I'm just the kind of person at this point now that I'm like, this is where I'm at. This is what I'm doing. I'm good in my own skin. You either want to come over here and roll with me and have a good time, or you can keep it moving.com.
Yes. Yes.
Like, really? And I'm okay with saying that. Like, let's not play no games.
Yeah, yeah.
This is what's happening. You know what I mean? Because we only got one life to live. So why live it being sad or feeling like, well, I didn't do this and I didn't do that, when it's like, no, it just, maybe I wasn't meant to be together.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Or maybe we were for 7 months and then it was supposed to end, and let's take that ride as well, you know?
And say goodbye happily and wish a person well, correct? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I love that about you. So now you're married.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been married?
4 years.
4 years. Mm-hmm. And you have a family.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, you just had some twins.
Just had some twins.
Oh my gosh, how old are your twins?
They turned 1 year old yesterday.
Ooh. Yeah. How many children do you have?
So that's a funny question. So I have a 3 year old, exactly. A 3 year old, twins, and then now we're pregnant again. And so we're right back at it.
Well, that's all right. You know, that means that there's love, you know? Mm-hmm. So now, how are you with your children? Because, you know, like you said, you're not going to, at least I'm hoping that you don't, teach them that they can't cry, that they can't be in touch with their emotions and things like that. I think that that's kind of like, I just feel like us baby boomers, well, not baby boomers, but now this generation, like, we're teaching to love a little bit better and to let people live in their own skin and be happy with who they are and who they love.
Yes.
You know, what ways are you going to teach your children that was different than your upbringing?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the point, right? Every generation is supposed to evolve the family name and evolve the species. And so I'm not, you know, faulting my parents at all. However, what I do recognize is that, and we do this unconsciously. If your parents are really stressed out, more than likely you become an out of the way kid. You become and that was me. That's it. People pleasers often are the children of parents that were really stressed out. Right.
Wow.
if your parents were really sad, maybe you become an entertainer or a clown, right? Or you get in trouble a lot so that you get the attention. And so recognizing some of the ways in which kids adapt to try to receive love. For me, with my children, I deeply encourage a few things. Number one, and this may trigger a few people, but I think it needs to be said, sexual repression is one of the biggest issues we have on our planet. So many people were taught to hate or go against their own biology. And it's self-included. I felt so much shame and so much, Jesus is watching if I'm having sex or masturbating or anything of that nature. I hate, like I literally never enjoyed sex until I was probably 33 years old. The first time I ever made love was with my wife. Everything else was just, I'm a sinner, I'm bad, I'm terrible, X, Y, and Z. And so that's one of the first places that we will not be doing. We will not be shaming our children, and we will not be, you know, both of my son is especially has found his penis, and this dude just, he goes to work on it. And I'm like, buddy, that it's okay. It's okay. Just there's a time and place for it. You're not wrong because you see it and you like it, right? But we just not going to do that right here, right?
Boundaries, right? I get it, but not here right now. Okay. Yep. Oh my goodness. Okay, so we're getting ready to start coming to the end. So there's a couple of questions that I want to get out of the way before we wrap things up. How do you hustle?
One of the reasons why I'm in the position that I am in, even financially, is because my hustle is always attached to purpose. It's always attached to service. And so I said it earlier, some people really should be rich as hell. And I know I'm one of them because of my heart. I've been giving when I had nothing. And now that I have a lot, I just give a lot more. And so when I wake up, I think to myself, who am I robbing when I don't show up? Who's at their edge? Who's committing a slow suicide and needs somebody to slap them across their face and wake them up?
Wake up.
Yep. And if I don't show it, then if I don't show up, then who will? And so I hustle by doing aligned, committed action. So I do, and a lot of people need to hear this. What usually takes somebody a month in my business, I do in a week. What usually takes somebody a week, I do in a day. I have what we call a success list instead of a to-do list. And so I only do three things a day. Everything else is extra. Everything else is a cherry on top. All three of those things are needle moving things. They are aligned, committed actions. And these are the type of things that drive my business and drive my life. And it's the same thing in my relationship.
Okay.
Everything I ask myself, out of all the things that I could do for my wife, what are the top three things today that would make her feel beautiful, seen, heard, loved? And I do those things. Right. And so that's the game I play.
Oh, wow. Those are good. When you said, what ways can she be seen, heard, and loved?
Yes.
Do you think those are things that people forget to do while they're in relationships?
100%. People get turned into roommates and they forget that their partner, you know, is in need. And we need each other, you know, like we're tied together. And like I said earlier, out of 7.7 billion people, the person that, you know, you call your wife, your husband, your boyfriend, your boo, that person, you know, is in your life for a reason. And oftentimes we can take them for granted. I often say this, and I mean this. If I think I know my wife, our relationship is over. Right. So I have to continuously stop thinking that I know her to give her space to be whatever she wants to unfold into. But when I lock her into, oh, she's just that, and she's just this, there's no space, there's no growth.
Okay, agreed, Preston. That leads us perfectly into today's hustle hack. Darlings, today's hustle hack is hashtag amplify your life. Find new ways to share who you are. What do you truly believe that you deserve? Acknowledge your greatness. Design your life to be fulfilled. Ask for help. Challenge the stories you tell yourself. Honey, if you want someone to treat you good, you got to treat you good, because you will. It's like laws of attraction. And I believe that I deserve good love, and you do too. But I'm only going to be with someone that loves me the way that I love myself, because I deserve love and good love at that. Right? Yeah, he said, preach it, Vivica. Go on and tell him. Amplify your life and your love life, girl, while you're at it, okay? Yes. Well, Preston Sprouse, I want to thank you so much for being on Hustling with Vivica A. Fox. Tell the fans out there where they can find you at on social media.
At Preston Smiles on everything. YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, all the things.
Okay. Oh, before I leave, what's happening for you next?
Oh, man. You know, I'm focused on helping other coaches. I have a company called Kaboom Coaching, where mm-hmm. we help coaches build their businesses and step into abundance. So that's the main thing. And I coach a bunch of people behind the scenes who are high profile people.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah, there's a reason why they're high profile, because I got Preston smiling on them, literally.
Yeah.
Well, you guys, you know where you can find your girl. You can find me at Miss Vivica Fox on Twitter. I'm verified, and at Miss V Fox on Instagram. Also, Stage 29 Production Podcast. Go find us there as well too, at Stage 29 Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, review, download, and listen to Hustling with Vivica A. Fox. I'm available on podcasts wherever and whenever you'd like. Until next time, darlings, bye for now. The Hustling with Vivica A. Fox podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only, and is not intended as a replacement or substitution for any professional medical, financial, legal, or other advice, diagnosis, or treatment. This podcast does not constitute the practice of medicine or any other professional service. The use of any information provided during the podcast is at the listener's own risk. For medical or other advice appropriate to your specific situation, please consult a physician or other trained professional.